This is BPN Radio, your 24-hour internet prayer station, calling America to pray. It's time now for the Christian War Room with your host, Michael Schonborn. Now, here's Michael.
Yeah, thank you, Dave, for this introduction there. And you are listening to the Christian War Room, and it's great to have you here. We are back on our subject, 100 Ways to Kill the Theory of Evolution. And why is it important? Because our youngsters, they go to the universities, they go to the colleges, and they take on board what godless professors tell them. And I'm just looking at my microphone, which is a bit in a mess. Godless professors, what they tell them. And they believe what they say. And because one is science, the other one is religion. That's always the big argument we always hear. So science must be right, religion must be wrong. And that's the end of the story. Yeah, they lop it up and suddenly the whole theological concept doesn't work out anymore. Other problems as well. Pretty much anything is explained based on the theory of evolution. Okay. Right, I'm going to tell you a little anecdote, and I'm going to carry on. There's one guy, and he believes he's been talking to a reptilian. Yeah. And I don't know what you think about this. I love the obscure, the bizarre, the surreal. And I listen to anything. I listen to flat earthers, and I see what they have to say. I listen to those guys who believe that they are talking to extraterrestrials. I think that most of it is just, the heavy cheese sandwich at night and a bit of a vivid dream and a distortion of reality. Could it be real? Now the Bible is very clear that angels can materialize and that we can see angels and that we can sometimes even entertain them without realizing. You know, they come, they talk to us and they do some stuff and we don't realize that we have entertained angels. It's a big question as well. I'm looking back at my life and I had a couple of really weird people, you know, dealing with very weird people, you know. And one person in particular, I can remember them. And I mean, he looked just like an ordinary bloke to me, a bit scruffy, a bit a bit whatever. And anyway, I don't know who he was. Yeah, he needed to go somewhere. And I just picked up some cash and coins, and like he knew this, but he hadn't seen me. Obviously, he wasn't in a position to see me. And he came to me and he showed me a Bible and a couple of other things. Yeah. So in other words, look, I'm a Christian. I need some help, and he needed a particular sum of money. Yeah. So. I didn't know, you know, whether this was real or not. I mean, normally, you know, whenever you see beggars and things like that, nine times out of ten, you think, this is either lazy people, you know, who don't want to work, people who need to feed a drug or a drink of it, and who just pursue a certain lifestyle where they don't want to work and they just want to live off other people, you know, giving them bits of money and stuff like that and making a living that way. Sometimes it's genuine, sometimes it's just con people who try and get you. It's very, very difficult, very, very difficult to judge. And so, obviously, what I don't want to do is I don't want to be stingy. That's one thing. I don't want to be taken, you know, by a fool either. Not a fool. I don't want to be taken as a fool by some con man, yeah, naturally. And I don't want to support, you know, people who use this as a trait. But anyway, long story short. I don't know, you know, even today I think about this and I wonder deep down in my mind, was this an angel? Yeah. I tried, this is the other thing as well. I sorted this guy out. Yeah. And then in the end, I thought I had to do some stuff and I thought I can drive him to wherever he needs to go. So it's not a problem. and I turned around and I couldn't see him anymore. I didn't know where he was, what was going on, where he had gone. No idea. Yeah. It wasn't too spooky. He would have had a chance to get off and to get away, to walk somewhere. It was in a crowded place. So it wasn't sort of a Twilight Zone kind of spooky, but it was sort of very, very strange. Yeah, and it made me think. I'm not sure whether I'm right or not. You know, one day in eternity, when I have an opportunity to look back on my life, I may know the answers and I may know what was going on. And maybe it was nothing. And maybe, you know, in other instances, I maybe have seen angels and didn't know. Okay, so that's one story. Bible says, you know, that sometimes you entertain angels without your knowledge. Yeah, and all Paul says is just be hospitable. You know, be hospitable. You know, if somebody needs something, give them. If somebody needs something to eat, just don't be stingy. Just go for it, because in doing so, you may have entertained angels. Okay. So that's a story. Now, what's happening on the other side? Can the other side materialize as well? Can they send people around? There seems to be a suggestion that there was something like that going on before the flood. And Jesus said that when he comes back, it'll be like in the days of Noah. So there are some suggestions that maybe we get, you know, some stuff as well. And that some of these spiritual realities can be manifesting, you know, seemingly in the flesh, that we can see them, similar to angels, but they're not real angels, they're but angels. Even Paul warns, and he says, even if an angel came, you know, speaking a different gospel to the one I've told you, you know, cursed be he. So it's suggesting that it might be possible, you know, that even angels might come and, you know, speak of a different gospel. Okay, so I've been listening to a couple of guys. It's quite interesting. So I was listening to a secular guy, and he was talking, you know, allegedly having all this insight about all this UFO stuff, and he made some interesting points, which I thought were actually quite far. He said that whatever they've experienced, that something's not quite right about this, and that he doesn't think they're extraterrestrial, but that they are extra-dimensional or interdimensional. They come from another dimension, not from another planet. And that's a point. I think Chuck Missler made the point quite a lot. And again, a lot of appearances and manifestations and things like that, they seem to suggest that, you know, that it's from another dimension and not from another planet. Yeah. Anyway, then he came to the conclusion, oh, they can only be friendly and we should be nice to them and all that. And I think this is probably leading up to the great end time deception, which is going to come. And then there's another guy, and he claims that he has been talking to a reptilian, and he could see that person as a reptilian, and they try to pretend to be, you know, normal people, try to mess with the brain of other people and try to appear as an ordinary human. And he had this long conversation with this entity, you know. So I listened to some of the stuff, and I found it very interesting. I mean, I'm going into this knowing that this is demonic activity. There are people getting deceived. There are people reaching out to something they shouldn't be reaching out to, and they get drawn into something. And I believe this is a great deception which is coming. Now, what these entities are saying is that they are higher on the evolutionary scale and that we are somewhere below and that they are trying to guide and to help us. So that is sort of all this bloody blah, all this message which is coming out from there. Based on the message which is coming out and based on the lie, I tend to believe that this guy actually had a real experience. Yeah, he didn't film it, he couldn't see anything, he was just talking about it. But it seems to suggest that maybe he's had a real experience and he's met one of the fallen angels, yeah, who have come to manifest themselves here on Earth. How can they do this? How can they manifest themselves? And the answer is clear. Man is selling himself out to these other powers. Man is turning away from God and is turning towards evil. And that is what I believe is making this stuff possible. And these guys get more and more power. Okay, right. They talk about the evolutionary scale, they put everything into evolution, and straight away you can see where all this doctrine and this idea is coming from. It's coming straight from the pit of hell. It is there to deceive us, it is there to try and lead us away from God. Once we are ancestors of a monkey, we are, you know, the whole gospel becomes nonsensical. Once you believe in evolution, you may as well forget about the gospel. Jesus would have being God become flesh as an evolved monkey, I mean, this is just crazy to even suggest this, but that is the logical conclusion if you believe in the theory of evolution. Now, my friend, we have been made in the image of God. That is what it's very clear. Now, I'm living with a creature here. I'm living with a cat. And the cat is one of the kindest beings around and very clever, very understandable. But she has got no understanding of God. Yeah. Not that I would know. Communication between me and the cat are not that good, but in general, animals have got no understanding of God. We have. We have been made in the image of God. We've got something inside of us that cries out to God, that wants to connect with God. Same way as Adam and wanted to connect with God in the cool of the day. You know, this is what we read in the Bible. And the only way to come back to God is really through the gospel, through Jesus Christ, through God becoming flesh, taking the punishment which we own, which is due to us upon himself, and moving on with this. Yeah. Providing a way back to God, providing the perfect Lamb of God, the perfect sacrifice, so that we can be reconciled with God through him taking the punishment we deserve. Okay, we are talking about 100 ways to kill the theory of evolution. Evolution is a very, very bad theory, meant to deceive us, meant to tear us away from God. And yet there are a lot of things which are there. So I'm at number 32 now. And one of the things is the moon is moving away from the Earth, and that is at number 32. And I don't know the exact figures. I should have written them down here. I've got a little book where I've got all the points down. I did a calculation, you know, if 6 billion years is true and the moon moves every year, sort of a couple of inches, but the moon would have been about a third closer. But then again, you don't know whether the movement of the moon away from the Earth is a constant or it would change. But it says it's a couple of inches or something every 1,000 years, so it's not that much from what they can determine so far. But if that were the case, there would potentially be a problem, and it would not necessarily tie up with the theory we have. Now, the other thing about the moon as well is, and I just want to make you think back on the great eclipse which we had in America. Maybe if you're in America and you've had the chance to see the eclipse. When you look at the great eclipse, one thing you would see is that the moon covers the sun exactly. And this is bizarre stuff where the moon is 400 times smaller than the sun and is 400 times closer to the Earth than the sun. So when you look at those two figures, it's from our perspective, the moon and the sun are exactly the same. They're in exactly the same size from our perspective, looking up into the sky. And again, that's, you know, chance. This is just by chance that this is the case. You know, and then the other thing is what I think I mentioned this before, but let me mention this again, is that the moon orbits or turns around on its own axis in 14 days. Yeah, so that means that the same side is showing, is facing the Earth all the time. I was trying to read up on this, where this is coming from, and it's probably one of the other points I've got rather than point 32, might be 33 or something, but I tried to sort of figure it out and to read up on it, and they say, oh, it's to do with tidal movements, and that's what turned the revolutions of the moon down. But even if it slowed down the refs of the moon, the refs are exactly a fortnight. Yeah, so one or not a fortnight, 30 days. Yeah, so one revolution around the Earth is pretty much the moon turning on its axis, so that the same side is always facing the Earth. Now, you don't find this anywhere in our solar system. All moons are spinning around faster than our moon, you know, just so that we can see the same side of the moon all the time, you know, that the moon doesn't turn around. Again, nobody talks about it. They come up with some theories, so theories don't make an awful lot of sense. Mathematically, they cannot be confirmed, and yet, you know, they are there. So that's number 32. And number 33 is the dust on the moon. They reckoned, you know, the Earth, the moon, billions of years old. You can actually measure the dust from the cosmos falling on the Earth, and they've done some experiments in Hawaii. so they could roughly determine how much cosmic dust is falling down. They did some calculations, and the first moon missions, they had real concerns about this, that there's so much dust because the universe is so old that that when they come down with the spacecraft, that it would just disappear in a cloud of dust. And all we see is just a couple of inches. And that's pretty much, I think it's per 1,000 years, is about an inch of dust or half an inch of dust. And there were just about 6 inches or something like that. So it's not really that much of an issue. And again, there's no erosion on the moon. The only type of erosion you have is sunlight and solar radiation destroying the rock that's on the moon and making it into, turning it into fine dust, but finer dust, but there's no real erosion on the moon itself, since there's no atmosphere. Okay, number 34, the sun, the size of the sun, just being right, you know, in comparison to the moon, that's number 34. Again, when we look at the whole things, I mean, I've heard some theories, if the Earth would be a little bit further away from the sun, it wouldn't work. Yeah. Life wouldn't be possible. If it's a little bit closer, life wouldn't be possible either. So the sun is exactly the right size, and the Earth is exactly in the right orbit as well to make life possible. And we can see this with Mars and Venus. Venus is overheating. Mars is too cold. And life is not possible on either of those planets. Okay, I'm going to move on. 35. The whole evolution, theory of evolution is not, the timeline is not sufficient to agree with the gene pool construction. Again, when you look at the human genome, you are looking at a huge amount of information. I should figure out the figures, but again, my point is not to do a scientific treatise, but it's just to make you think about it. Now, apparently the genes, the gene which are sort of in DNA inside us, and just in one single cell, if you could string them up, and talking about the moon, I've heard, and I'm not sure how precise these figures are, but the point is, it's just really, really big, whether this is true or not, but you could go to the moon and back about 3 times or something if you were to string it up, you know, all this DNA just in one on top of one another and stack them up. There's a huge amount of information, so we are talking about a code that's billions of lines long. Billions. Trillions. Huge amount of information that's inside of you. Even a single cellar needs about 600,000 genes to try and make it possible, you know, that the single cell can work, like a single cell organism. Now, human body is much more complex. We've got hands, fingers, organs, brains, teeth, eyes, ears, lots of mechanism inside of us, and all the genome is kicking in to try and make all this work, and there's a huge amount of information that is in there. Now, the timeline of 6 billion years, even if you assume that there would be, you know, a couple of mutations every couple of years, it just wouldn't work. We've got a pretty good idea of what was happening over the last 1,000 to 2,000 years as far as mankind is concerned, and also whether there were any mutations or anything like that. Now, an evolutionist will come and he'll start telling you about sickle cellars and things like that, which is, again, you know, it might save you from malaria, but it's a pretty debilitating mutation if you've got sickle cells, especially if you've only got sickle cells. It's pretty tough, pretty tough. I've heard some stuff as well, that something about milk. There's one evolutionist, and he made the statement that people in antiquity couldn't drink milk because they had no way of digesting lactose. And again, I don't know where they come up with this stuff, but that's just, you know, me, just ordinary guy. I've been looking at some literature from BC, and there was literature about an Egyptian guy who was a doctor, and the name was Sinu, and there was a story about this guy. It's an old Egyptian text, and in this text I was reading the original. It's a translation from that. And it was saying that they were living with the Bedouins, and Bedouins were good in boiling milk in various forms and drinking them. So the whole milk thing, that has been going on, and again, I don't know where they get it from. So their argument is, oh, it's evolution, you know. Today we can take it, then we couldn't. Yeah. Okay, a lot of rubbish which is there, but there's, I would make the statement, and I'm fairly confident in this statement, there's no observable mutation or no observable evolution taking place in the last 1,000 to 2,000 years. The genes we had about 1,000, 2,000 years ago are pretty much the same as today. And then again, when you then assume that there's maybe one or two changes, you know, in every generation, and then gradually it'll do something, you struggle with the timeline. 1,000 years are not enough. Yeah, in 1,000 years you're looking at about 20 generations, maybe 50 generations, depending on how fast we breed. Somewhere between 20 and 50 generations. So a million years would be, so 1,000 years, about 50, 50 times 50, no, 50 times, 1,000 times 50, how many thousands are in a million? It's 1,000, isn't it? 1,000 times 50 is 50,000. So we had 50,000 generations in a million year. And then we have maybe 100,000 in 2 million years. This is when man is supposed to be there. It's not enough, because we haven't even seen anything in the last 50 generations. You know, nothing, nada, zilch. And then these guys try to make us believe that this is the way it all happened. Yeah. Okay. We've got maybe one more. We've got number 36, the missing links. Missing links in general, and not just a human missing link, but missing link between us animals, missing links between different species. There have only been small changes, which are pretty much adaptation and survival, the survival mechanism, again, survival of the fittest. It's not a contradiction. It doesn't really prove evolution. It just says that there's an adaptation taking place, but it's not moving from one species to another, from one kind of animal to another. And again, when we look from lower to higher life forms, or from different kinds of animals to other kinds of animals, we've got a big problem with the intermediate species, intermediate kinds. What we find a lot in the fossil layers is that we used to have a lot more animals than what we have today. Yeah? And again, the fossil layers, they are not timelines. I mean, the story we are being told is a lot of it's stuff from the 1800s, which has just been taken over without critical analysis, without being scrutinized. The creationist version is, you know, big flood, big catastrophe, everything was swirled up, everything settled down, and you got dead creatures being trapped in these layers, and with the pressure and the water becoming fossilized. Yeah, that is our, you know, these, you know, something dies, drops in the ground, stays there for thousands of years, and gradually becomes fossilized, and then we can see this. It doesn't wash. Yeah, we can see this. We've got tons of evidence to prove the opposite. Tree trunks being cutting right through four or five layers, where we know that, you know, that tree trunk hasn't been stood there for millions of years. It's been stood there, you know, even not even for 100 years, because it would have been rotten away. So something has happened suddenly, and stuff got caught up in these layers. So there's total lack of transitioning from one to the other, and there's no evidence, no real evidence of that. All we have is just like a much more bountiful variety of kinds and species in the past, and a lot less today. Yeah, that's all we have. And then very often what is made to be transitional is those extinct breeds, you know, species, kinds, which we had in the past. That is what is presented by the evolutionists. Okay, how much time have we got? We've got a few more, minutes. I'm not sure whether we can squeeze one more in. Yeah, we've got 37. Okay, I'm just giving you food for thought. You know, what about oxygen? Where does it come from? What was first? Was oxygen first, or were plants first? We know that life without oxygen is not possible. big question. Nobody knows, you know. It's a chicken and egg question. There's plant life required to generate oxygen, but we need oxygen to generate life, you know, to some extent. So where does it come from? You know, where did it come from to start off with? No life without oxygen. Just a quick question, you know. Maybe you know the answer, maybe you don't, I don't know. But just think about it. And there are a lot of these relationships that one thing can't exist with the other. You know, the chicken and egg scenario, what was first, the chicken or the egg? So we come to a conclusion, you know, as a creationist, we don't have problems with that because God has created whatever we have in a mass with his genius. He has created it, put it in place. And that's what we are seeing today. We are seeing just a fraction of what used to be there before it all went tipsy-turvy after the flood. Okay, right. You're listening to the Christian War Room. We are fighting against the theory of evolution, and it is something which is very, very serious. People are very confused. Even on the occult side, people who get messages from the occult, they always talk about the evolution, and they are the higher evolved being there ahead of us, and they planted us, so it's no longer God, but it's them. And therefore, we need to respect them and invite them, and they are benevolent and they are good to us and all the rest of it. Now, my friend, don't be deceived. You know, there's going to be a great deception coming. These guys, they hate you. They tell you that they love you, they hate you. The only one who really loves you is God. And he has sent his only son, you know, to die for you. God so much loved this world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. You shall not perish, but you shall have everlasting life because God loved you. He's the only one who loves you. Don't believe any crazy entities coming into this world. You know, like a lot of people seemingly, you know, have experiences with those entities. And they are just being told a bunch of lies. And we need to stick with Jesus, my friend. We need to stick with what Jesus has said. Now, there's good news as well. He's coming back again soon. We don't know when. We can't put a date on it. It could be before this broadcast is over. It could be in 100 years' time. It could be in 10 years' time. Maybe in even less than that. We don't know. But we know he's coming back again. And he says, you know, when you see all these signs, and we are seeing them right now, lift up your eyes, because that's the time when he will return. And again, a message not preached, you know, forgotten within the church, because it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to talk about sin, uncomfortable to talk about the coming disaster, the coming tribulation, and Christ's return to take his own home to be with him and to save us from the wrath of God that is to come upon this earth, on all those who have chosen not to believe. Okay, don't be one of those, my friend. Okay, let's pray. Lord, I just want to pray, Father, for all our listeners. I pray that you will, Lord, that you will pour out faith, that there will be great revelation, that the power of God will come upon them, and that they will see the truth, and that the truth will make them free. Lord, I pray, Father, for supernatural revelation about yourself and who you are, the love you've got for us, Lord, that you have died for us on the cross. Lord, that you didn't shrink back, that you didn't hold back, but you went through with it so that we can have eternal life. Lord, I want to praise you. I want to thank you for that. I pray, Lord, for creationist scientists, Lord, that they will find the evidence which will just put to shame all those, which will make them to fools, all those who, Lord, who in rebellion against you are trying to push the evolutionary agenda. I pray for that in Jesus' name. Have mercy on us, Lord, and lead us into truth. Lead us into wisdom. Let us understand what is really going on in this world. I pray also, Lord, give us good understanding and wisdom to the coming deception, Lord, that your word says, Lord, that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. Lord, help us, show us the truth. Amen.
For the past half hour, you've been listening to the Christian War Room with host Michael Sean Bourne. For more information on how you can participate or find out more about the Christian War Room, simply go to ChristianWarRoom.com. That's ChristianWarRoom.com.